The concept of master and slave in history and philosophy and education. Jean-Jacques Rousseau wrote in his Social Contract that man is born free and everywhere he is in chains. One thinks himself the master of others and still remains a greater slave than they. Rousseau thought he could establish the reason for this change in the human condition through the analysis of the society. For him, the social order was just that, social, not a gift of nature, but emanating from and evolving with society. This idea of the social contract was not new with Rousseau. John Locke wrote about such a theory of natural rights and an implied social contract, which empowers the consent of the governed, with the alternative being the devolution into what amounts to a general slavery. But this is beginning in the middle. Slavery, both in practice and in the abstract, has a long history. Before the age of discovery, slavery was a consequence of the growth and expansion of societies at the expense of other societies. For Plato, slavery was a given fact of social existence. Not to say that he did not struggle with the concept. Once he recognized that absent slavery, individuals would have the opportunity to find their own position in society. The presence of slavery and its necessity in Athenian society mitigated against any significant changes, and, in fact, Plato expanded the concept of slavery to include the relations among the social classes, so that all members of society are subjected to the gods, the laws, rulers, elders, parents, and so on. For Plato, individuals should accept their station, justified by his idea that they are all subject to or slaves of their inborn nature. Laborers are governed by their appetites, artisans by creativity, guardians by seeking glory, and philosophers by the search for wisdom. Plato wrote in his Myth of the Metals. Aristotle considered human beings were meant to live in a complex and stratified social setting, which was dominated by the aristocracy with the laboring slave class. This social structure lasted throughout the ancient period, up to the change to serfdom, which tied the person to the land, not to the master. Thus, slavery in practice, well known in older societies, became the metaphor for slavery in the abstract, which analyzes the social structure as a system of servitude. Rousseau could say that we're everywhere in chains, and Locke could claim that the state of equality is still lacking. Immanuel Kant countered the empiricism of Locke, Hume, and others. He wrote that Hume interrupted my dogmatic slumber and gave my research in the field of speculative philosophy quite a different direction. Kant rejected the empiricist's dependence on sensory experience, cause and effect connection, slavery to the passions, and their rejection of a priori reasoning. Kant's analysis of reason was influenced, on the other hand, by the view of human nature expressed by Rousseau, whose interest in the moral and spiritual world informed Kant's interest in basic moral philosophy, his appreciation for the common man, and for his quest for a practical philosophy. Carl Friedrich wrote that, indeed, the problem of freedom, the freedom of the human personality to unfold and fulfill its higher destiny, is the central issue of all Kant's philosophizing. The connection between the ancient view of slavery as a natural, if unfortunate, condition of human existence, the Enlightenment view of the wrongness of the enslavement of one person by another, culminating in Kant's questioning of the rationality and legality of the practice of voluntarily selling oneself into slavery, and the modern expanded view of slavery as an abstract description of some social relationships, was the master-slave dialectic of G.W.F. Hegel. Expressed in his Phenomenology of Spirit, Hegel developed the dialectical reasoning devised to allow for the development of science. His phenomenology refers to a particular means to derive from apprehendable sense experiences an encompassing scientific approach to acquiring knowledge. This process depends on consciousness and the activity of consciousness through a dialectic method. Hegel posits three relations of conscious subjectivity to its object. First, the sense certainty, then the perception, and finally, the understanding of their manifest phenomenological surface. For Hegel, individuals are all simultaneously independent and dependent, I and other, Lord and bondsman. He introduced the concepts of Lord and bondsman, later translated master and slave, in an earlier work as a relation that is immediately and absolutely established, along with the equality of the power of life. At this point, there's no question of any right or any necessary equality. Equality is nothing but an abstraction. It is the formal thought of life of the first level. And this thought is purely ideal and without reality. In reality, on the other hand, it is the inequality of life which is established, and therefore the relationship of lordship and bondage. Hegel believed that where there is a plurality of individuals, there is a relation between them, and this relation is lordship and bondage, based on the unequal distribution of power. In his phenomenology, however, he examined the self-consciousness of the individual. This self-consciousness consists of two aspects, the powerful and the powerless. The powerful, the Lord, is the consciousness that exists for itself, relates himself immediately to the thing through the powerless bondsman. This interconnectedness forms the basis for the development of self-awareness and self-consciousness. Hegel wrote, "The genesis of science is the theme of the phenomenology of spirit. This genesis starts from spirit immediate or spiritless spirit, that is, from the consciousness of sense, and must tread a long road before it can become true science, can give birth to its true concept or element. Such a genesis will not be fancied illumination of the road to science, nor yet an actual founding of science, nor yet a pistol shot of illumination aiming straight at absolute knowledge. The task of proceeding from the uncultured to the knowing mind is really performed by the universal individual, that is, self-conscious spirit as such." Hegel established the dialectic, the structure of thesis, antithesis, and synthesis, as a method of acquiring knowledge. He developed the idea of bifurcation of the individual into Lord and bondsman, established the connection between the ideal and the perceived, and anticipated the development of the role of science and truth. He wrote, "The true shape in which truth exists can only be the scientific system of such truth. To help bring philosophy closer to the form of science, to the goal where it can lay aside the title love of knowing and be actual knowing, that is what I have set myself to do." Friedrich Nietzsche advanced into an anthropological concept of the different moralities in human societies and cultures, the idea of master and slave morality. This system of morality was not value-laden. Nietzsche thought that, not unlike Plato's myth of the metals, master-slave morality was innate, with dominant individual master traits like nobility, a strong will, a sense of entitlement, and flexibility. along with slave traits that tended toward the social values of kindness, goodwill, and objectivity. Nietzsche, however, saw a will to power that motivates individuals not to accept their place, but to strive to achieve and to progress. Among the philosophers who advanced Hegel's thought, it was Karl Marx who applied Hegel's dialectic to the examination of the social and economic conditions. Marx and his collaborator, Friedrich Engels, aligned with a group called the Young Hegelians, who were largely involved in the philosophic denunciation of religion. Among the Young Hegelians, Ludwig Feuerbach, a student of Hegel from whom Marx appropriated the anti-religious and materialist view to construct dialectical materialism. Marx, like Hegel, viewed the historic process in terms of contradictions. For Hegel, these were developed through consciousness. Marx's dialectic, however, focused on the material process in society. Contained in his dialectical materialism are the Hegelian concepts, the qualitative shift, the interpenetration of opposites, negation of the negation. The qualitative shift is the idea that change occurs quantitatively up to the point at which a new structure is formed. The interpenetration of opposites postulates that the meaning of things is found in the relationship with their dualistic opposites. The negation of the negation also relates to that dualism. He found in the master-slave, Herrschaft und Knechtschaft, the basis for the various forms of oppression and slavery, both real and metaphorical, as the descriptor for industrial economic relations. For Marx, the human movement toward the thirst for freedom in personal and social life is the master-slave dialectic described by historical materialism. In this dialectic, early communal and social relations are the thesis. The rise of domination of one group over another in a master-slave relationship is the antithesis. Feudal society rises as the synthesis. Feudal society then becomes the thesis. Industrial society, the antithesis, and capitalist society, the synthesis. Capitalist society, according to Marx, can then be challenged by proletarian upheaval, resulting in socialism and ultimately the classless communist society. In his Critique of Marx and Marxism, Otázka Sociální, T.G. Masaryk wrote that Marx gave various different definitions for historical materialism, such as that as we view all Marx's definitions and explanations and the explanations of his followers, it appears to us that the entire teaching of historical materialism is confused. Masaryk's analysis of Marx and Marxism concludes, Marx proclaims a permanent revolution, but revolution cannot be the end, only a means, and even that only in extreme circumstances. There's really little new in what Marx has to offer. Up to now, society has been built more on death than on life. We have not yet learned to live fully, to live positively. Nonetheless, it is the master and slave dialectic that forms Marx's class struggle. Masaryk wrote, murder and suicide are only acute manifestations of the chronic destruction of life. We are still masters and slaves, and more, we are barbarians. We want excitement, not work. We want exciting sports, including revolution. Masaryk did not deny the mutual bondage of master and slave, but concluded that revolutionary action would only change the occupants of the slave and master classes. He suggested that this had already happened with the rise of capitalism, which begins with the liberation of production from feudalism. The fight against feudalism appears politically as a fight for freedom and equality, but that freedom and equality meant, in fact, something quite different. It meant proletarianization and capitalization. Instead, he proposed the expansion of social democratic processes, giving rise to free citizens, equality before the law, and the withering of class privilege. Nikolai Berdyaev also had an interest in the relationship between freedom and master-slave mentality. He wrote, "Man is in a state of servitude. He frequently does not notice that he's a slave, and sometimes he loves it. But man also aspires to be set free. It would be a mistake to think that the average man loves freedom. A still greater mistake would be to suppose that freedom is an easy thing. Freedom is difficult. It's easier to remain in slavery." He found the answer in what he called the philosophy of personalism, which came from Berdyaev's concept of personality that exists in all individuals as an ethical and spiritual absolute existential center. Berdyaev's book, Slavery and Freedom, used the Hegelian master-slave concept to examine the human condition. He wrote, "The inward motive forces of philosophy are determined elementally. The primacy of freedom over existence, of spirit over nature, subject over object, personality over the universal, creativeness over evolution, dualism over monism, love over law. For Berdyaev, personality exists independent of any social, economic, biological, or historical conditions. The socialized, civilized, maybe even the educated, are sociologically enslaved and objectified, but the conditions of servitude are considered acceptable. There exists, however, the contradiction. Personality, while highly individual, is also, he wrote, social. In it there are traces of the collective unconscious. It is man's way out of isolation. It belongs to history. It realizes itself in society and in history. Personality is communal. It presupposes communion with others and community with others. The profound contradiction and difficulty of human life is due to this communality. From personality, thought Berdyaev, character is developed. He wrote, "Character is the possession of power over oneself, the victory of slavery to oneself, a triumph which makes possible victory over slavery to the surrounding world also. Character is revealed above all in relation to environment. Temperament is a natural gift. Character is a conquest and attainment. It presupposes freedom." In the first section of Slavery and Freedom, Berdyaev examined the role of personality, the importance of the individual person, and his philosophy of personalism with the opposing master-slave ideas. The second section considered the problem of individual freedom versus slavery in its many different social and psychological aspects. Such as the slavery of being to being, to God, to nature, to society, culture, and to individualism. Berdyaev discussed the historical and economic slavery to sovereignty, war, nationalism, aristocracy, consumption, revolution, and to the utopian. The slavery to love in its multiple forms, erotic, compassionate, and finally, the slavery to the aesthetics of beauty, art, and nature. He engaged in religious historical ideas of time. In its essence, Berdyaev's personalist philosophy is an expansion of Kant's imperative to treat others as an end, not as a means to an end. Berdyaev wrote, "Every human personality, the personality of the least significant of men, bearing as it does within itself the image of the highest existence, cannot be means to any end whatever." Berdyaev agreed with his contemporaries in the Frankfurt School and the New School for Social Research that the conflict of freedom and objectivization exists in the existential struggle for the expression of personality. "The source of slavery is always objectivization," wrote Berdyaev. "That is to say, exteriorization, alienation. It is slavery in everything, in acquisition of knowledge, in morals, in religion, in art, in political and social life. Jean-Paul Sartre found the expression of the dialectic of master and slave in the concept of oppression. Sartre wrote, "Exploitation of man by man, characterized by the fact that one class deprives the members of another class with their freedom." Simone de Beauvoir incorporated not only the Hegelian dialectic of master and slave, but also the Nietzschean genealogical model of investigating social contradictions. She developed the notion that the most important aspect of becoming an adult was socialization into gender-specific roles. Recent social and political history is replete with issues that eliminate the shortcomings of society. Radical, reactionary unrest seems indicative of the deep divisions of society along economic, racial, nationalistic, and gender identity. The continued violent responses to policing behavior has exacerbated these issues and indicate a visceral reaction to intolerable conditions. Certainly, educational intervention, clarifying the issues of social stratification and the concomitant problems. The question is there a master-slave dialectic at work in the philosophy? Or perhaps, better, what form does the master-slave dialectic take in educational philosophy? Hegel's analysis of the rival consciousnesses of Herrschaft and Knechtschaft resulted in a broad interest in the concept of the roles of lord and servant in society, manifested not only in true slavery, but also in the metaphorical slavery of social relationships. If we follow Aristotle and Nietzsche with the belief that there is a separate slave class or separate slave morality, it would imply that education for the masses should be somehow different than for the master or ruling class. Marxist interpretations would seek more to educate the young for class consciousness, focused on the role of economic relations in the society. The existential perspective on the master-slave relationship would seek to expose the conflicts and contradictions in society that give rise to the political, social, religious, and economic relations that provide a basis for control of individuals. John Rawls' idea of justice as fairness, based on liberty, equality, and opportunity, with the goal of a well-ordered society and a moral person, takes us back to Rousseau and Locke and the idea of the social contract. Rawls wrote about the function of education. To him, it was to understand the public culture, participate in its institutions, become economically independent and self-supporting members of society, and in developing the political virtues, all this from within a political point of view. Doing this, believed Rawls, meant focusing resources on the most vulnerable. Plato, if we believe the Republic, would have focused on the achievement of students to indicate whether they would ascend in society. Such an egalitarian goal is still to be desired. Thank you.